Five persons, including actress Sharon Tate, were found dead at the home of Miss Tate and her husband, screen director Roman Polanski.
The whole thing is very mysterious, but this is what I know.
Authorities say a menacing letter received yesterday by a Vallejo newspaper was not sent by the infamous Zodiac killer. Betsy Gebhardt has details.
That Area 51, the secret Air Force base in Nevada, actually exists.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
He's been called the East Side Rapist. He's been called the Visalia Ransacker, the original Night Stalker, and the Golden State Killer.
You have now entered into the House of Mystery, the best in true crime, conspiracy, and alternative history, with Al Warren and Kevin Thompson. KCAA, the stations that leave no listener behind. Broadcasting on 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM. The trifecta of talk radio for Southern California.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery on KKNW 1150 AM Seattle and KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles. I'm your host, Al Warren, and sitting side chair today is our Stephen David Lampley. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well, Al. How are you? Welcome, everyone.
Things are good. It's another hot day, lots of smoke here, and the next 3 days we will be in the 100-degree territory. So I have to blame that on the east or south or something. I have to blame it on someone. So now today we are going to go back into the JFK assassination as well as a kind of a MK Ultra somewhat and the Olson jumping out of the building sort of CIA agent sort of thing. So we've got quite a guest. We're pleased to have him. Thanks for being here. We've got H.P. Albarelli, Jr. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So now, Hank, first, when you get into writing these books, what draws you into the whole CIA and JFK and all that assassination? And I say that mainly because with the JFK assassination, I find that there's so many different theories, and a lot of it is kind of, you know, junk or flavor of the day, and it changes every year, and we get this big mass amount of books, and you go through it. So as a researcher, do you have to kind of go through all of these different themes and stories and theories before you can present your own research, or do you just ignore it all?
Well, that's a difficult question. I myself have gone through, I think, virtually every theory that's out there. There's a few I've spent a short amount of time on. There's some fairly wild, far-reaching theories, you know, that connecting JFK's death to UFOs and things that are pretty wild, and even the MK Ultra program. But I'm familiar with those theories. I'm much more familiar with the more realistic grounded theories, and I've read a tremendous number of books. I have no clue as to how many books, hundreds, I'm sure. And that's stretched out over a period of about 25 years. Originally, I had no intention of getting involved in the subject of the JFK assassination at all. I'd been warned by other writers that it's a black hole, and once you become involved or immersed in it, it's very difficult to extract yourself, and that's true. But I maybe took a different approach from others in the sense that I don't really have any emotional investment in the story or in any of the theories, and not because I didn't care for JFK. I mean, I was in high school when JFK was assassinated, so I didn't really initially see him as a political figure. He was simply president of the United States, and I, like a lot of people, were pretty shocked that anyone would even consider assassinating the president. But, you know, that was grounded in my youth. But anyway, yeah, to answer your question, I've read hundreds of books in terms of various theories about why and who killed JFK. A lot of the books are pretty redundant. They repeat theories that a lot of people are familiar with. A lot of that familiarity is believe it or not, rooted in people's reactions or impressions that they got from watching the movie, the Oliver Stone movie, JFK.
Right.
Which is really interesting. I was just talking to someone about that a few weeks ago, and it was an interesting conversation because it dredged up a number of facts that are easy to forget, and the primary ones being that most of the main characters in the Oliver Stone movie weren't even considered main characters in the Warren Commission investigation. So that movie, in a lot of ways, had the effect of introducing a number of characters like David Ferry and Bannister and others into the whole, you know, JFK lexicon and research arena. Since that time, since the movie's been out, a good number of the books that have been published do focus in many ways on the Garrison investigation. And there's a good number of writers and researchers who are very much tied to the Garrison investigation and agree with a lot of the findings of Garrison. I myself, put it bluntly, don't, but nonetheless, I've certainly read everything that Garrison looked into. There's a massive amount of material out there,
yeah,
concerning his investigation. A good place to start, though, is with the movie.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Can people really trust in the government to do a proper commission? Like, when you talk about the Warren Commission, that seems to be a big spot where a lot of people talk, and they say it was a whitewash and all that. And when we talk about the Frank Olson case and the Rockefeller Commission, and obviously there was flaws in that too, how reliable is it that these commissions get appointed by the president and then they give us information that's not really very, very good?
Yeah, well, I think almost in all the cases where commissions have been appointed by the president, for example, the Rockefeller Commission, the Church Commission, the Warren Commission, they're all created primarily because of political pressures that are brought to bear on the government and generally on the whoever's president at the time. But if you, and I've had a large amount of experience reading through all the findings of these commissions, both published findings and unpublished findings, and then interviewing countless people that work for them. The thing that I find is because they're created out of a public, out of a political concern, that most of their findings don't go beyond that. They discover things that the public and other politicians certainly find some value in, but bottom line is, and I think you got to cut to the chase. Bottom line is that nobody ever pays the price for anything as a result of the investigations of these commissions. There were, if you look at the Rockefeller Commission or the Church Commission, which dealt almost primarily with the CIA and assassination, some of the drug programs, nobody was indicted for any of those acts, and I'd say at least 60 to 90% of those acts were completely illegal, both on the local level and on the federal level. So what these commissions amount to, actually, this in my opinion, is they're really dog and pony shows for Congress to be able to say, step back and say when they're finished, well, you know, we looked into this, we discovered a lot, we know what happened generally, but we're not going to punish anybody, and there really isn't any bottom line, because when you consider, okay, can these things happen again? Are they likely to happen again? The answer, like it or not, is yeah, of course they'll happen again. They're probably happening while the commission is conducting their own investigation. And we certainly know that to be the case with assassinations and with all the drug programs, the CIA drug programs, MKUltra, MKNaomi, all of those programs. They continue to this day, because no commission or committee that delved into them and investigated them ever drew a bottom line where they said, no, we don't want this to happen again in this country. And we're going to, you know, we're going to introduce into Congress a law or, you know, legislation or regulations against it. That's just never happened. Even with a church committee where you really had a Pandora's box concerning assassination and assassins, and CIA people that oversaw those assassinations and assassins, nobody ever said, well, we don't want this to happen anymore. There was a lot of lip service paid to the fact that supposedly there were laws on the books that forbade assassination, and there were, but you know, it happened nonetheless, and you had countless people testifying to that effect before these committees. So I don't know, you can go around and around with this stuff, but bottom line is they satisfy the public and other members of Congress for a short period of time, and then it's sort of, you know, 2 or 3 months later, oh ho hum, it's back to normalcy, and that normalcy includes all those shocking and so-called illegal acts. The only thing being that now they're not so shocking, and now they're not considered that outlandish. In the late 50s, well, actually in the mid-70s, when all the LSD experiments were exposed that the government was conducting, people were pretty surprised at that. The general public was pretty surprised at that. A lot of college kids weren't, and they probably had a better footing in the effects of LSD than Congress or the CIA did, but most people were pretty shocked at that. Today they wouldn't be. Drugs are more widely accepted. And, you know, drugs are illegal in a lot of states and becoming more and more so. I assume, you know, within 10 or 15 years, certain drugs will be entirely legal in this country. So, I guess these commissions and committees, if they provide any kind of benefit, it's just to expose things that haven't been exposed and to kind of shake people from their sleep in terms of what the government, you know, really is doing, both in the country and worldwide. But nothing ever changes. You just get more of the same.
Hank, you're right. Actually, you're 100% correct about these commissions. They do all this, like you said, dog and pony show and don't really produce much action. Matter of fact, I believe it was Katzenbach, I think it was, who recommended that there be an investigation. It seems that this 888-page Warren Commission report has created more conspiracy and more question than they originally set out to quell. What's your opinion?
That's right. Well, that's right. The Warren Commission report, I think the summary was like 1,000 pages, but the entire report, I think it was 26 volumes.
Was it? Okay.
Very, very thick books, and those were made available for sale. People can still buy the various volumes now on Amazon used. Nobody's republished them, but there's hundreds of them still out there. But yeah, there's still researchers poring over those volumes. And finding things of importance or seeming importance that were overlooked in 1964, and possibly, you know, throw some light on what really happened with the Kennedy assassination. But the big problem with the Kennedy assassination, I mean, it's probably the biggest. A lot of people claim it's the biggest mystery in the world in terms of, you know, a whodunit, who killed Kennedy. At one point in time, maybe a majority of people in this country believed that it was Lee Harvey Oswald, and maybe there were a few unanswered questions, or he had some people that cooperated or collaborated with him, but people generally believed he was guilty, but that didn't last long. I think that started to, that percentage of people, which is a majority, started to shrink pretty quickly within the first 10 years. And I think now there's been Gallup polls over the last 30, 40 years that reveal that anywhere from 60 to 70% of the country, maybe more, don't believe that it was Lee Harvey Oswald that killed Kennedy now. But then when they're asked for specifics, they either don't know or they offer, you know, one or more of the countless theories that are out there. So that commission certainly didn't. I mean, the finding of the Warren Commission was that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. He was a lone assassin and he killed Kennedy. And the commission itself agreed on that. Some people on the commission rather reluctantly, they were pressured by LBJ and J. Edgar Hoover, but nonetheless, that was their finding. Everyone in this country has moved way off from that now, and for good reason, because they've pored over those volumes, read all the documents in the volumes, and then the thousands, if not millions, of documents that back the volumes up, and you just find countless holes in their findings, and countless roads and avenues and facts that they didn't explore.
Do you think that presents
a big problem in terms of the Kennedy assassination today, because there's so many people, and I'm not criticizing this. There's so many people that are interested in solving the case, and have a stake in it one way or the other. But the problem is it's overstudied.
Right.
You've got people who are writing 800-page books, and then a year later somebody writes an 800-page book to discount the 800-page book that came before. And then people writing books just preparing to present theories that may come two or three years later. So I think one of the problems with the Kennedy assassination has just simply been overstudied and picked relentlessly apart. And one of the big failings of investigating that assassination now is that we didn't have the forensics, we didn't have the science that we have today in 1963. So a lot of what's offered up simply it's theory, and it really can't be based on any science because no scientific studies were really performed in 1964 or 65 or 66. They don't even know, when you ask the essential questions, how many shots were fired? Well, people argue. People say it was two. People say it was three. Some people say it was eight. Some people say it was 14. And when you have that kind of discrepancy in basic things that happened regarding Kennedy's murder, it's really hard to come up with anything that's really considered a fact when you can't even get people to agree on how many shots were fired. You can't get people to agree on the fatal shot. Did it come from the front? Did it come from the rear? There's people that claim that the autopsy results were falsified. There seems to be good evidence to that effect. There's people that claim that the only film, the Zapruder film, which was taken within 24 hours, 48 hours by the FBI and the CIA, has been altered. And that film actually disappeared for about 15 or 20 years before the public even saw it. So there's not a good foundation, a factual foundation, that people generally agree on, in terms of the Kennedy assassination at all. And now it's evolved to the point where people, to begin with, had their doubts about Lee Harvey Oswald, but the thought was, okay, he was the wrong person in the wrong place, and he must have had something to do with it. But now there's an entire movement afoot that has Oswald as an innocent party who might have been working for either the CIA or the FBI or both. And some people claim that Oswald actually attempted to warn Kennedy that he was going to be assassinated. So, I could go on and on like this, but it just shows the lay of the land, the landscape you're dealing with in terms of trying to solve this actual mystery in the absence of any really hard evidence.
Yeah.
Is hopeless.
I was going to say
basically hopeless.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. People investigate a lot now and write based on emotion and feeling too, and not so much.
Yeah,
a lot of
emotion and feeling, a lot of ways JFK has almost become canonized. He's a saint in a lot of people's eyes, whereas. He was a man like any other man. I assume he was a good man, and he had his faults, and But nonetheless, people chose to murder him. But the other problem is too, in terms of researching just the Kennedy assassination and the Robert Kennedy assassination, is that a lot of people, one of the main theories that's put forward in this country today, probably the primary theory, is that the CIA did it, or people connected with the CIA did it. Yet the irony of that is that if you read the books by the people that put that theory forward and do a pretty good job of putting that theory forward, they rely 99.9% on CIA documents, CIA and FBI documents, to make their case. And to me, there's a real essential problem there, because anyone that thinks that the CIA is releasing documents, has released documents in the past, or still releasing, as they promised to do, documents, you know, earlier this year and maybe 5 or 10 years from now. But anyone that thinks the CIA is going to release documents that's going to allow anyone to make an ironclad case as to the agency having a hand in Kennedy's murder is pretty naive. I mean, you know, they've had since 1963 to go through these documents. I'm not saying they're going through them today. I think virtually everyone that works for the CIA and FBI today has no idea who killed Kennedy or both Kennedys. They weren't born then, or they were very, very young then. They certainly didn't work for either agency. And a lot of people have this fixation that anybody that goes to work for the CIA somehow is indoctrinated right off the bat in terms of the Kennedy assassination and told this is what you can say, this is what you can't say, and more importantly, this is what you think. And that's just not the case. I was talking to somebody a couple of days ago, and he lived in another country, lived in Denmark, and that was his impression. Well, the CIA, you know, those people can only speak with one voice, and they can't be perplexed or have any questions about the Kennedy assassination. That's just not true at all. I don't know many people who work for the CIA, but I've certainly known enough who know far less than I do, and probably have more doubts about certain things than any researcher in the JFK research community. Right. So my point is, it's like you work for the CIA or you work for HHS or Homeland Security. When you go to work for an agency, that doesn't mean you sign away your common sense or your ability to pose questions, or, you know, you certainly sign a loyalty oath to the country, but there is no indoctrination course that everyone goes through in terms of the assassination or any great secrets held by the agency. There's a massive number of people that work for the CIA. As a matter of fact, there's two secrets. During one of these investigations, I think it was either the Rockefeller Commission or the Church Commission, a senator, I don't remember which one it was, said, well, I'd like to ask Richard Helms, who was director of the CIA at the time, I'd like to ask you two questions. And Helms said, okay, fire away. And the senator said, well, I'd like to know how many people work for the CIA and what your annual budget is. And Helms said, well, those are two easy questions to answer for me, because Those are the only two questions you're not allowed to ask. So even with Congress, the CIA does not have to tell Congress how many people they employ or what their budget is. So when you have those kind of ground rules, you can really see what you're up against. There's people who have ventured numbers forward in terms of number of employees, and recently somebody advanced the number 50,000 employees for the CIA, but that's laughable. 50,000 is, if you go out to Langley and drive around the various parking lots, you might find 50,000 cars at any one given time parked there. But a more realistic number is, I've been told, is 280,000 people worldwide. That's a phenomenal number of people. And you could do the rough arithmetic just on payroll, and that's a phenomenal amount of money. But
You mentioned sorry. Go ahead.
Pardon?
You mentioned a while ago, you briefly mentioned the Rockefeller Commission and Church Committee Commission. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. What I find in talking to people, a lot of people believe that these, like the projects like MK Ultra, some of those others, MK Delta, they never happened. But yet, when you tell them, look, well, there's congressional committees, and here's the paperwork, and here's the real stuff, you know, they're surprised mm-hmm. that this actually occurred. Now, what is your take on, because MK Ultra was reduced in scope around 1964. Now, do you think, in your opinion, that any of these operations had anything to do with the assassination of JFK?
That's a tough... I have to try to answer that in a reasonable way. The MK Ultra programs... I have a book coming out on the assassination in April of next year. And the book deals directly with that. So I can say safely that, yeah, the mind control programs, to a certain extent, not to a large extent at all, did play a role, in the JFK assassination, concerning certain characters, who were involved in the assassination. That's certainly not saying that JFK was a mind control victim, or even that Lee Harvey Oswald was a mind control victim. But those mind control programs, did play a role, and those programs were certainly very, very real. MK Ultra, there's been a number of books written about that program, based primarily on CIA documents that the agency themselves produced. They thought they had destroyed most of the documents. They had destroyed about 500,000 documents, but they made a critical mistake in the 60s when they destroyed the main documents, and they overlooked about 60,000 pages of financial documents that revealed quite a lot about just the MK Ultra program alone. But the problem of looking at MK Ultra is that's just one program, and you just mentioned yourself MK Delta. That was another name for MK Ultra. I think it came after they did away with MK Ultra. So what they do with a lot of these programs is they reconstitute them. They revitalize them, they rename them, and they just go along their merry way. On MK Ultra alone, they spent millions and millions of dollars in terms of doing just research on simple subjects like LSD, hypnotism, and various other drugs, and they certainly didn't throw all that research out the window mm-hmm. because it got exposed through a congressional investigation. A lot of that a lot of that research that they paid for was useful for their purposes, and they use it today. The agency still uses LSD. They use it primarily as a harassment drug, but if you look into just the recent literature concerning detainees held in Cuba at Guantanamo, you'll find that there's been some real disasters concerning the use of LSD on those detainees. There were even a couple deaths that were fairly well covered up, but that were discovered by the hardworking journalists. And but again, well, the point. Go ahead.
Most notably, I guess, would be that of Frank Olson, I suppose.
Well, Olson's an interesting case. I spent 10 years researching a book on that case. That case came very, very early. That Olson died in November 1953. And LSD played a huge role in his life and his death. He was actually dosed with LSD 9 days before he died. And prior to that, he was a civilian employee for Fort Detrick and the CIA, working with LSD and other kinds of exotic drugs that were used for interrogation purposes. That Olson's death regarding LSD was covered up from 1953 until 1975. There wasn't one word about LSD, and then in the Rockefeller Commission report, they threw in a 4 or 5 sentences without naming Olson, just saying that there had been accidents in terms of their drug program, and one civilian employee had been dosed with LSD and then committed suicide 9 days later in New York City. Well, you know, the newspapers, the media pounced on that right away, and within a day found out that was Frank Olson, and then all hell broke loose, and we had the church committee and the Kennedy committee, investigating all of that. But for all intents and purposes, we know now, what Olson's involvement was in research-wise with those drugs and why he was killed and who killed him. But overall, there's still a lot of, just hundreds of unanswered questions regarding his death. I don't know if we'll ever know the full truth about what he was really working on.
Well, that would be like with Kennedy as well. No matter how many documents they tend to release and whatever goes on, is there really going to be a single answer for the death of Kennedy or for Olson at this point?
Well, for Olson, my book, I started out with the intent of writing a 10,000-word article on the Olson case, and realized within 4 or 5 months that would be impossible. I was going to spend 2 or 3 months doing that, and I ended up spending 10 years researching that book. So we know now, in large part, what Olson's involvement was with LSD and other drugs for the CIA. And that's a real horror story if you read that book. And we know who killed him, and we know why he was killed, because, he wanted to leave his job. Simply put, he wanted to leave work for the CIA and Fort Detrick and retrain himself and go into the private sector, believe it or not, become a dentist like one of his sons did later on. But but he simply knew too much, and he was too deep. He was too much involved in the activities of the CIA for anyone to say, okay, Frank, you know, you can retire, and go find a new job and just don't say anything about everything you've seen over the last 15 years. That just couldn't be allowed. And he'd seen a lot. He'd seen a lot of horrible things. So that's why he was killed. With Kennedy, it's a little bit different. I've spent the last 5 years, working on this book on the Kennedy assassination. I can't say a lot for a lot of, legal reasons right now and various NDAs I've signed with the publisher and other people, but, come April, we will know a lot more about the Kennedy assassination, than we've ever known. And in a nutshell, and this isn't hubris on my part, it really has involved a hell of a lot of luck and some very fortunate discoveries. We'll know, who killed Kennedy and why. That doesn't mean there aren't going to still be unanswered questions, such as the forensic things, you know, like, okay, you know, where did the bullet come from the rear or from the front? We don't know, and that's not in the evidence we've looked at, but we can tell you without doubt who fired the shot and why. And that'll, you know, that'll carry things forward to a large extent. Will people argue about it still? Probably. I don't know. If they look at the evidence the way we've looked at it, I don't think so. I think the evidence is, in my estimation, I've been working with it for over 3.5 years now. It's pretty overwhelming. And the story makes tremendous sense. But I know that's like a horrible teaser, but that's all I can say.
Yeah.
And I probably shouldn't even be saying that much at this point in time.
Well, yeah. You know, and I find that the JFK researchers and the group of people that do that, I don't know if you could ever going to get them to all agree on one thing. There's such a
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. A lot of these people have a tremendous investment in the various theories. You know, they've subscribed to and have argued for over the last, you know, 20 to 40 years. That's not to say some of those theories don't align themselves with the facts that we're going to come up with, but I don't think it's going to satisfy everyone out there.
Right.
The one thing I learned, it was really interesting with the Olson case. I found the whole story of Frank Olson to be very, very provocative. And the conventional story that had been put out just didn't make any sense whatsoever. And so I reached a level where I guess I was obsessive with wanting to know or wanting to try to find out, well, what actually happened here? You know, why did Olson commit suicide or was he murdered? And it certainly looked like murder. And I spent a little over 10 years investigating that case and was able to find out why he was killed and who killed him. But the thing that really surprised me was once all those findings were published in a book, a lot of people weren't happy about it because they didn't really want the mystery solved, and in solving it, it didn't completely fit their theories in terms of stating that, okay, the CIA killed him and they killed him brutally and threw him through a window, blah, 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 and because they hated Frank Olson and wanted to murder him. It's a little more complex than that. But what I'm trying to say is a lot of people who look at these, you know, cases, the mystery of Olson's death, the mystery of JFK's death, I think bottom line really don't want them solved. It's a lot more fun to just delve in this stuff and to come up with theories and flesh them out and then come up with a new theory and, you know, flesh those out. So regardless of how strong the evidence is, there will be a number of people who won't accept it or will be very begrudging about what is offered. I think, generally speaking, about the public itself, separating the so-called JFK community from just the general public and people who are curious about the assassination, I think they'll be more than satisfied. And if they want to try to pick the evidence apart, that's fine. You know, go to it. There's still unanswered questions, like the one I threw out a few minutes ago. You know, who, where did the bullet come from? Did it come from the rear? Did it come from the front? And people can still work at solving that. But the reason that remains a mystery is what we were talking about maybe 10, 15 minutes ago, that we didn't have the forensics that we have today, at play in 1964. And bottom line is we'll never know that. People can advance well-founded theories, but a theory is still a theory.
Yeah. Yeah, but they'll still overanalyze every detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's how it goes.
Absolutely, and yeah, they don't. It's interesting. To a large extent, that's even happened with. If you look at the assassination of Abraham Lincoln,
right?
There have been a good number of books published about. Theories that John Wilkes Booth didn't really kill Lincoln, or he had accomplices that have never been identified or found or whatever. But, and that's, you know, people like that. People like a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess the point I'm trying to make is that there's something in people that, they'd rather see certain things remain a mystery and not be solved, because then that means, okay, I've got to move on to something else. But God knows there's plenty of cases, there's plenty of mysteries out there that need solving, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's an endless array. Wow.
Well, endless, absolutely.
Well, it's been a fascinating conversation. So now your books, of course, are all on Amazon and in good bookstores.
Yeah, they are.
And do you have a website or something that people can check out?
We have a website that's going up soon. The Kennedy book, actually, it can be pre-ordered on Amazon now. I'm not, this isn't self-marketing, but I do know that the book that's advertised on Amazon right now is fairly grossly underpriced and described as, I think, being 365 pages, whereas the actual book is over 500 pages, and I'm sure will cost a lot more than the price that's listed now. So, but if people pre-order it, they lock the price in regardless of changes. So I tell all my friends, order it now, yeah. And you might save $10 or $15 because they can't boost the price. But yeah, they're all on Amazon. I love Amazon. I know a lot of people hate it. It's done a real disservice to bookstores. But for a research geek like me, I like it because, you know, if they don't have it new or used, and you can get practically any used book going back 100 years with Amazon, it's just it's a tremendous research tool for research geeks like me.
Oh yeah.
Initially, when I was researching, well, when I first started the Olson research, the internet wasn't really available for research. So I used to go to the Library of Congress every day, and because they have every book and that's been published virtually in the world. But that was extremely time consuming, and you can't take any of those books out of that library or even buy them at that point in time. So
yeah,
I love Amazon. Yeah.
It makes life a lot easier.
A lot easier. Yeah, it certainly does.
Well, thank. Well,
but again, I'd be happy to come back and talk to you once the book's out. I'm sure we could talk for a long time and very, very sensibly about, you know, who and how, and there's a number of major surprises in the book, things that really kind of knocked me off the box to begin with.
I heard Hillary Clinton did it. Sorry,
yeah,
I have to end on a good laugh.
Well, the Russians did it.
Well, thank you, Mike. Our guest has been H.P. Albarelli, and all of his books are on our website as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.